number one sports site in the world.
Live from the Quick and Loan studios of the Yahoo Sports Radio headquarters. You know what they say.
You know what they say. See a broad to get that booty act.
Lay her down. Smack her. Yeah. Oh,
that nighttime is the right time. It's Tony D on Yahoo Sports Radio.
If we die, we die together.
And yahoosportsradio.com.
Tony D with you.
Getting interactive, recapping everything that's going down.
And giving you your first chance to react. Nighttime on Yahoo Sports Radio.
Yahoo Sports Radio
is now.
Oh, got to be.
This is what we do.
From the Quick and Loan Studios, here's Tony D.
Yeah, I spend a lot of time going over a lot of stories when I do the show, and some of the stories come as a shock, and some come as no shock at all. When it comes to breaking news, I don't mean games. Games, outcomes are outcomes. But when we get a piece of breaking news, whether it's Deflategate or whether it's a team trading a player or a player getting released or a coach getting fired, I'm either surprised by it or I'm not surprised by it, and I can see it coming. The situation at SMU, I could see coming a mile away. Anybody who's followed the career of Larry Brown should have seen this coming a mile away. The NCAA has pounded SMU again, slapped them with a postseason ban, Larry Brown suspended for 9 games. They have lost scholarships. It is another case of another coach putting winning on top of ethics. And we can go back and forth all day about, well, this in the end is what works in sports, right? Nobody cares about whether you follow the rules. People just care about whether you win. And if you follow the rules and win, well, then you're a better man than most, because that's very, very difficult to do. But Larry Brown has gone down this road way too many times for SMU to be surprised, for the SMU fan base to be surprised, and for college basketball fans to be surprised. He did this at UCLA when he was there 30 years ago. He did this at Kansas when he was there 25 years ago. He has done this in 3 college stops. Everywhere he goes in college, he has led them to NCAA problems and postseason bans. For that, he's a perfect 3 for 3. The NBA, he bounces around the NBA too. Larry Brown is a great coach. He gets the most out of his players. There's no question about that. But if you hire Larry Brown, you hire everything that comes with it. The academic fraud, the simple lying to the NCAA, and then, oh, I'm sorry, let me go check with my lawyer real quick, and then I'll come back and tell... Larry Brown will just do whatever he has to do to win games and then pray to whatever God he prays to that he doesn't get caught. And that's like most college coaches anyway. But Larry Brown has done it so many times, it's a pattern. It was only a matter of time, SMU, and only a matter of time. Do the bold thing. Fire him for this. Don't let this go. Don't have the president, the academic director, come out and give a speech about how, well, the things that we saw in this report were that he did this, but there is an excuse for that. And then he did this, but there is an excuse for that. And boy, I tell you, we're just so happy. We're going to appeal this because stop. I've heard this too many times in covering sports. Everybody's innocent. The NCAA is just coming down hard because they got something against you. You know what? I'm more likely to believe. And that's why I started the show by saying, of stories that come in, I either believe them or I don't, or they come as a shock or they don't. I got a funny feeling that Larry Brown is guilty of all this. Because if you do it once, all right, you made a mistake. You do it twice, well, now you got an issue. You do it 3 times, you need some help, because you're just habitual. At this point, you're habitual. And Larry Brown can't coach college basketball without getting in trouble. This is for every single program that's ever thinking about bringing on this 71-year-old guy. He cannot coach basketball without getting in trouble. He can't coach in the NBA without wanting to leave, and he can't coach college basketball without putting everything you are in jeopardy. Stop giving him jobs! You may like the win total. You may like the idea that your program is associated with the Hall of Fame coach, and that I get. But he cannot go into a recruit's house and honestly talk about being an ethical person and doing things the right way. If he does, he's lying because he doesn't know how to do this. And if SMU has an ounce of pride in them, they will walk away from Larry Brown. It's simple. I am not an NCAA guy. I think they overuse their power. And I think sometimes, and a lot of times, their investigations are shams. They don't have subpoena power. Sometimes I think they make it up as they go along. They take way too long because they don't have subpoena power to do investigations. But I swear to God, if I had to choose between two entities that disgust me, like Larry Brown's college basketball career or the NCAA, which I despise, I'm siding with the NCAA. Because as many times as they've gotten some things wrong or they've botched things up like they did at Miami with the Nevin Shapiro thing or they did with USC stuff by hammering them too hard, for every time that I rail against the NCAA, there are a lot of times where they've done things right. I cannot say the same about Larry Brown's college coaching career. Heck, I can barely say it about his NBA career. If your kid plays for Larry Brown, he will be a good basketball player. He will be a better basketball player when he leaves. And on that, I'll give him credit. But know that you are dealing with a man that knows exactly what he's doing, will lie, will cheat, and will do whatever he has to do. Some of you out there may admire that, but to me, it is a pile of garbage. If you want to change rules, if you want to change procedure, if you want to change the way basketball does business, there are better ways to do it than just cheating and cheating and cheating. Find ways to change all of this. Find ways to make the sport better. Find ways to lessen the overbearing cloud that hovers over the college basketball world. The NCAA just hovers over them. Find a better way. But you don't do it by being that pathetic 70-year-old basketball coach who's involved in academic fraud. Academic fraud? This isn't giving a kid a sandwich or 10 bucks to take his girlfriend out for a pizza. This is academic fraud. It goes at the whole heart of why we do this in the first place. SMU, please show some pride. Don't make excuses. Don't try to find ways to convince people like me that, oh, this whole man, he just don't know what he's doing. And when he did do something wrong, by God, he just tried to make it right. He's a fraud. Get rid of him. He's a fraud. All right, 800-777-2907 is the number to join us tonight. That and a lot more. My goodness gracious, I think this might be a show where we cover almost everything tonight outside of hockey. College basketball we just did, NBA had media day, and there's a huge news about Derrick Rose we got to get to. The NFL, of course, college football, of course, Major League Baseball down the line because the Yankees may not get into the playoffs, the Astros may blow this. Still talking about whether or not Bryce Harper deserved to get choked. That's all coming up throughout the show tonight. At the bottom of the hour, Jake Roos will join us from UGASports.com or UGASports.com. We'll talk about Georgia and Alabama. How good are the Bulldogs? How did Grayson Lambert get this job anyway? And is Nick Chubb seriously in the same conversation as Herschel Walker? Seriously? We'll talk about that at the bottom of the hour. But coming up next, one Detroit Lion says, hey, guess what? Every play we run, they know what's coming. Who said that? Why he said that? And what can the Lions do about that? That and NFL news next. It's Yahoo Sports Radio.
This is Tony D on Yahoo Sports Radio and YahooSportsRadio.com.
Working the third shift.
This is Tony D.
Once again,
from the Quicken Loan Studios, here's Tony D.
Thanks for joining us here on Yahoo Sports Radio. So Golden Tate, wide receiver for the Detroit Lions, has said that in all three losses so far this season for Detroit, the opposing defense has been able to call out Lions plays before the Lions even run them. Which sounds like an excuse, right? At first, it sounds, oh, that's just ridiculous. Your team stinks, and this is... But then you start thinking about it, and you go, maybe the offense for the Lions is so simplistic that it doesn't take that much studying or memorization to figure out an uncomplicated Lions offense. And if that's the case, how often does this occur? Because this is the one thing I've always said about the NFL. Whenever we get into these grand conspiracies, whether it's Spygate or Deflategate or anything else that involves coaching and what the Browns were doing, it's really, really hard to keep things secret from players. Because players talk to players all the time. Players are moving from, you know, to and from teams all the time. So you really have to shake up some things in order to basically circumvent the conversations that players are having amongst each other. So I'm wondering, if I was in the belly of the beast of the NFL, if I was a player and I was going to practice every single day and I had buddies around the league and I was pretty familiar with people, how often would I hear things like, oh man, you guys playing the Lions? Oh my God. Yeah. We knew all their plays, man. I gotta tell you something. It doesn't take much when you say, you'll see. I wonder how many of those kind of conversations go on around the league with not just the Lions, but with other teams. If you're running an offense in which opposing defenses can figure you out quickly, that's why you're 0-3, and that's another reason why offensively we can look at the Lions and go, golly, shouldn't they be much better than this?
I saw a quick story today showing that Calvin Johnson's barely ran a deep route this year in three games.
Yeah, oh yeah!
He's not running past 15 yards.
In this story, Broncos corner Bradley Roby said Sunday that the Broncos knew what the Lions were going to do. And then Tate told a local radio station in Detroit that while he hadn't heard Roby's comments, it was no surprise because other players have had said similar things. This is what Tate said about this. I find this stuff fascinating because one of the reasons I like football so much is that because it's the ultimate chess match. My son is a very good chess player. I'm a terrible chess player, but my son's very good at it, and he's gotten lessons from very good chess players and whatnot. And when we sit down to play, one of the things he says to me all the time is, you know, you have to see this game 3, 4, 5, 6 moves ahead. I only see it one move ahead. I reanalyze the board every time. I make a move, and then I have to reanalyze the entire board. Where when my son plays, or better, chess players play, they know where they're going, and they're 6 or 7 moves ahead in their mind of where they think the game is going to go. That's one of the reasons I like football so much, because plays and circumstances aren't called one play at a time. There's a whole idea of, then this play, once we do this, this is where we're going, and this is where, you know, this offensive series, we want to do this. This defensive series, we want to do this. We want to make sure that we don't pull out our, you know, show all our cards here. We don't want to show all our cards there. I mean, there's all of this stuff that coaches use because, again, they're looking at the game 5 or 6 moves ahead. The good coaches see the game 5 or 6 moves ahead. If you know where the other team is going, it is a tremendous advantage that can't even be calculated. So this is what Golden Tate said in the interview in Detroit. He said, quote, talking about Bradley Roby's comments that he knew where the Lions were going with their plays. He said, quote, I haven't heard that yet from that player. I didn't read anything about it, but that's not the first time this year that another player has said that. I've had a couple occasions in literally every game where they called out our play for one, then afterwards been like, hey, we knew what you guys were doing. I don't know how they know or what film they're watching that we're giving away. That's something we got to go back and watch our tendencies to figure out where we line up or how we line up or what formation or whatever it may be. We've got to figure it out because we're clearly giving it away. All 3 weeks of players come up to me and said, we knew what you were going to do. That's bad. Look, he knows the answer. Golden Tate knows the answer to this. He's not that naive to not know why the Detroit Lions are so predictable and why they're so easy to peg. It's play calling. It's the play design, right? The Lions are 0-3 and they don't look like a team that has a top of the line quarterback and one of the best wide receivers in the game and a running game that you know, should get on track occasionally. This is something the Lions absolutely better fix. But I got a question. Can they fix it? Can they do things quickly to fix this, or are they stuck with a predictable offense? Because it's very hard to change your socks in mid form. You know what I'm saying? This to me is an interesting story. Because if this is true, the Lions are in big trouble, and the Lions are going to have to reevaluate coaching. And if this is true, the Lions are going to have to relook how they call plays, how they design plays, and what is it about them that is so easily predictable. Because let's be honest, isn't something wrong with the Lions offense? I mean, when I saw this story, I went, well, that explains why they stink. This explains why, even against a Broncos defense that's very good, they never seem to look rhythmic. And remember we talked about this because you brought that up with Calvin Johnson. Remember when we talked about that game against the Broncos on Sunday night? My God, you have Calvin Johnson, you can't throw it down the field? I mean, late in the game, you're trying to get back into a football game and you do these dink and dunk passes for 5 or 6 yards at a time and there isn't a sense of urgency to try a 30-yard play or try a 50-yard play down the field? This might be one of the reasons. So this is interesting to me. I hope it's not as true as Golden Tate's alluding to, but if it is true, then Caldwell and the Lions better get back to work. All right, Jake Roos is going to join us coming up at the bottom of the hour, UGASports.com. He covers Georgia, a huge game for the Bulldogs, not to be undone here. Everyone knows this is a huge game, but this is where the SEC can be looked at differently. And by the way, our Alabama fans, going to be okay? Are they going to be okay with the Alabama Crimson Tide down 2 losses before we really hit to October? Because that hasn't happened in a very, very long time. But a loss to Georgia on Saturday would eliminate Alabama. I can't see a scenario where Alabama goes to the playoff with 2 losses unless chaos occurs all throughout college football. And we've got 2-loss teams all across the board. So Alabama's season could be on the line. 2 conference losses, it's going to be hard to get to Atlanta. And if you're not in Atlanta, you ain't going to the playoff games. We'll talk to Jake Roos about that next.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
It's Tony D here on the night time on Yahoo Sports Radio. All right, previewing some college football games and the big one going on in Athens between the Georgia Bulldogs and the Alabama Crimson Tide. Well, what could be in store for both Georgia and Alabama? Jake Roos joins us from UGASports.com, part of the Rivals.com network, and he joins us here on Yahoo Sports Radio to give us a preview. What's up, Jake?
Tony, how you doing this afternoon, man?
I'm doing great. Appreciate your time tonight. As we go over this big game, I want to know a little bit more about this Georgia team and what you have seen from them mostly in their SEC play, because the two other games that they've played were pretty easy. Vanderbilt and South Carolina. The strength of this Georgia team is what?
It's definitely that run game. I mean, anchored by a guy like Nick Chubb, who's kind of shown himself into this year to be having no sophomore slump, one of the best backs in the nation, and then also the rise of Sony Michel. He had an abridged season last year after an injury, but it looks like Sony's really recovered in grand fashion. He's playing his heart out and playing all over the field. They're splitting him out at receiver, having him at running back. So it's definitely that run game that's defining the Bulldogs right now.
Grayson Lambert comes in from Virginia. He's now the starting quarterback. Can you give us an idea of where he was when he arrived at Georgia? Was the job locked in for him? How did he present himself better than the other candidates?
You know, it was a bit of a surprise, I think, for a lot of people to watch the ascension. I remember when we saw him at the first fall practice, there were a lot of raised eyebrows, a lot of people asking questions and wondering if he would be able to win it out. And, you know, even through that Vanderbilt game, through the first half, it was a very shaky beginning to his career. He turned the page really quickly, though, in the second half of that, and he seems like he hasn't looked back since. Guys missed two passes in the last two games. So he's really on fire right now, and he looks like he's found a great group. Like you said, as far as being locked in, I don't think that was ever really the case. I think later down the line, Brian Schottenheimer decided that was the guy he wanted to roll with, but I think that this was a job he clearly had to win, and he's proven why he won that chance.
What does the Georgia passing offense look like? What is it, vertical? Is it just short out passes? How does he get the high completion percentage?
You know, they're mixing a lot of it in there. It's mostly been the short field. We haven't seen them go deep as much as we have in the past. He's really controlled in that area. You know, we're talking about up to about 20 yards. They don't stretch it much longer than that. Once in a while, they'll turn Malcolm Mitchell loose on a couple of routes, and we'll see what he can do. He's made a couple of plays that way. But for the most part, they're keeping it in the short field. It's paying huge dividends on the accuracy.
Jake, with a lot of the attention on Nick Chubb, and he has, 12 straight games, over 100 yards, I keep hearing these conversations about him and Herschel Walker, and I'm thinking, in Athens, isn't that blasphemy when you talk about Herschel Walker and anybody compared to him? But in that kind, is he really in that kind of company?
Oh, you know, he's really cementing himself quickly as one of the greatest Georgia's ever had. That's coming fresh off of a guy like Todd Gurley, who Bulldog fans, for the large part, hold as the second greatest running back to ever come to the school. You know, it seems like Nick's on his own path. He's charting that out, and looks like he could, at least climb into that same realm with Herschel. I think people do believe he's got the skills, he's got the power, and he's got the personality for it, too. Much like Herschel, just a very humble guy, doesn't talk a lot about himself, very team-focused, says, hey, whatever's best for the team, I'm not worried about getting mine, but always seems to get his, just like Herschel.
In terms of the way the Alabama team is coming in, everyone's kind of looking at the Crimson Tide and going, there's some holes here. When you see Alabama, when you've looked at the numbers and the tapes of Alabama, what do you see?
I don't see many holes. One of the things that Mark Ricks mentioned this week is it's hard to judge a team that gave up five turnovers in a game. Anytime you're talking about that margin, that's a huge margin for error. And, you just can't win many games. No team, I don't care how good they are, can really overcome something like that for the most part. So it was a big testament, I thought, to what Alabama's about, their resolve and their skill, that they hung as close in that game as they did and for so long. So I don't think there are a lot of holes, and I don't think Georgia coaches are buying into that narrative either.
Jay Cruz joins us from UGASports.com on the Georgia-Alabama game. It's coming up on Saturday. Give us an idea, Jake, on defense for the Georgia Bulldogs. How strong is it compared to other strong teams that Mark Richt's had in the past?
You know, I think it's right up there, especially in terms of athleticism. One of the big things that we're seeing from this defense is a real focus on gang tackling. A lot of guys swarming the ball, which is, in the past it's been more of an assignment-based thing. You take care of this area kind of zone. But, we're seeing guys just really get in there, put a nose to the ball. And like I said, I think the speed is the big hallmark. You're seeing athleticism out of guys like Jordan Jenkins, Leonard Floyd, and even the secondary play, a guy like Dominic Sanders has turned into a bit of a ball hawk at safety. So they're getting some contributions, too, from guys I don't think that they necessarily expected. But that rise has been swift since Jeremy Pruitt made it to Athens. And they've really become a strong suit for this Bulldog team.
In terms of the strategy for Alabama, is this a Georgia defense that has to get to the quarterback, or are they fine if they let Jay Coker kind of throw the ball, preventing yards after the catch and keeping him a little bit contained?
Yeah, I think they're going to be okay to do that. I think they're going to work on that containment plan much more so. A guy like Derrick Henry enters that same discussion as Nick Chubb. He's a guy who always seems to get is, you know, they're going to brace for that. And I feel like they feel confident with what they can do against the run. But I think it's more so about being able to declare tempo, you know, set the tempo for the game and really just sort of impose their will on the Alabama offense.
You know, now that we're in this new world of college football where, you know, a loss doesn't hurt you as much, you know, really got to watch how it plays out. Over the years, the big knock on Georgia has always been, well, you know, they lose that game that they should win. Every year, you feel like they've got a great team, and then they cough one away, and they don't live up to the potential. Jake, is that a fair criticism? Because it is tough to win in college football, and you can't win a national championship every year, and you can't win a conference championship every year. But the knock on Georgia, is it fair?
Oh, yeah, no, absolutely. And I don't think you find many Georgia fans that would disagree with you when you make that either. You know, it's a fair knock. It always seems like, you know, we're talking about the team last year that dropped contest against a team like Florida that people just had them slated to come in and really just work over. You know, that's kind of been a hallmark of Mark Richt's tenure, and it's something that they're hoping they can get over the hump with this weekend for sure.
As far as in terms of other strategies for this, where do you think this game is won? Is this a high scoring game? Two very good defenses, but yet at times, you know, both of them have very explosive playmakers on offense. Where do you see this game going?
You know, I think that the real battle comes down to the trenches. Who's able to set that tone? You know, Alabama comes in with a very hefty and very talented front seven. Georgia, meanwhile, four returning starters, you know, a host of seniors on the offensive line, and one of America's, I think, best-kept secrets on the line, and Isaiah Wynn, who stepped in this year. And I think that that's really where the battle comes down to. If Georgia's O-line's able to open up those holes, we know Nick Chubb can run the ball. I think that that's going to be what determines this entire game.
Jay Cruz again, UGASports.com, part of the Rivals.com network, Saturday in Athens. It's Alabama at Georgia. Appreciate it, Jay. Great insight on the Georgia Bulldogs. Appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem, Tony. Anytime. Thanks, man.
Thanks, I appreciate it. And, you know, you look at this team, and I agree with him on this, so many things about this game in terms of the trenches and all that. I look at this, and you see a Nick Chubb, you see two quarterbacks, and I know the knock on Jay Coker with the turnovers against Ole Miss, and he does throw a pick or two, but yet, when you have Derrick Henry, when you have Kenyon Drake, Alabama has some playmakers on offense, as Georgia does too, but I think this is one of those battles that's tight. It's going to be one of those games where points are going to be really hard to come by, because I think both defenses are up for the challenge. We know this is a big game. I mean, to remind Georgia that this is a big game is ridiculous, but think about the shift of where the SEC could be at the end of this game. A lot of attention on what Ole Miss is doing, and rightfully so. They're putting up some numbers, and they went to Tuscaloosa, and they beat the Crimson Tide. You can't take that away from a really good Ole Miss team that I argued last week could be the number one team in the nation. But if Georgia gets this win, even though it's at home, there's going to be a lot more attention on this Georgia football team, a lot more. And that, to me, is where we're going to start seeing this SEC take shape. Because a loss by Alabama, and that's pretty much it for them. So somebody other than Alabama is going to represent the conference in the playoff if indeed they get a team into the playoff. And, you know, and I know they will, but if you have a two-loss champion, it could be problematic. So that means who would it be? Is it Georgia? Is it Ole Miss? You know, is it Florida? Did they play better and continue to improve and end up going to Atlanta? There's so many different variables here if you throw Alabama out of the question. And don't forget LSU. That's the team I would be watching out for in the conference, because they should be 7-0. The schedule is very favorable for them to be 7-0 when they play Alabama in early November. But a loss by Alabama throws them out of the equation, and now we start adding more, you know, more teams into the mix in terms of SEC championships. It should be really fun. 800-777-2907 is the telephone number. I think Georgia wins this at home. I really like what they're doing. It wouldn't surprise me if they beat Alabama at home and then lose to Tennessee or lose to Florida. It's just the way the Georgia Bulldogs are. Tony D here on the Nighttime on Yahoo Sports Radio, continuing to look at Week 4 in the National Football League. 800-777-2907. And some other games in college football. It's coming up next on Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
This guy's on. Back to him.
Back to the Quicken Loan Studios.
And back to Tony D.
Thanks to Jake Ruse from Georgia helping us preview a game I'm really looking forward to seeing. I'm really excited. And here's the cool thing. On Saturday in the morning, I got conned into another 5K run, which, God help me, if I... This will be my third 5K run, and I'm not kidding when I tell you this. Every one of them so far, I'm literally taking my life into my own hands. I am so worried that I just have this desire to cross the finish line that somewhere along the line I just pass out or something. So my wife has given me like carte blanche on Saturday after the run. You can enjoy Saturday, she said. It's all great. No errands, no soccer, no whatever we got. She goes, nope, nothing. I go, oh, wonderful. So I'm going to sit back and enjoy Alabama, Georgia. And when you love something or you care about something, especially in sports where you love teams, you take them warts and all, right? People have criticisms of your team, but you love them anyway. And that's the way I feel about the SEC. In terms of football. Oh, I get the arguments. Oh, do I get the hatred? Oh, do I get the criticism? I completely understand. And there have been times where I've watched the pollsters give the SEC a break that maybe they just didn't deserve. And I've kind of had to go, ooh, while my friends were screaming about how biased this was and how the SEC should be ashamed of itself and all that other good stuff. And there were times where I just had to bite the palm of my hand going, I know I want to say something, but I can't. The Georgia Bulldogs are part of that whole SEC warts and all. I mean, think about how many good players over the last 10 years, 11 years, 13 years have come through the Georgia system. A lot of good players have come through the Georgia system. I mean, Hines Ward went to Georgia. Matt Stafford, Aaron Murray, Knowshon Moreno, Todd Gurley, you know, David Pollock. I mean, the number of players have been, it's amazing. Nothing. No SEC titles, no national championships. Highly ranked, disappointing. I take that with the Georgia Bulldogs. I've also taken a lot of the Alabama arrows. This is a game in which afterwards there's going to be a lot of conversation about where the SEC is going to be heading. Because if Alabama wins this game, then the conversation is going to be on the resurgence of the Tide. And believe me when I say this, those who are burying Alabama right now because that loss to Ole Miss, calm down. Alabama is not finished. They're not done. They are not vulnerable. They had a bad 5-turnover game against a Rebel team that took advantage of it. You are not getting Alabama to do that again. But if they lose, then the conversation turns to Georgia. And I think in the West, the conversation will turn to Ole Miss and LSU as the standard bearers of that division. But the conversation in the East will be about Georgia. Now we've got a team that's got a national championship caliber resume. Georgia will lose games they shouldn't. You've heard me say this so many times. But they'll also win games where you go, man, should they win that game? Georgia opened up as a favorite. I was a little surprised. Not a lot surprised, just a little bit. Because Alabama gets so much of the benefit. Even when they go on the road, Nick Saban just knows how to play coach these kind of games. He knows how to get his team ready for these kind of games. When push comes to shove, I'll take Nick Saban every time. So a lot of times he'll disappoint. He'll disappoint with a 5-turnover game against Ole Miss, or like last year when Bo Wallace was able to lead the Rebels past him, or Johnny Manziel a few years ago when he was able to beat Alabama. There are games in which Nick Saban has lost a little bit from his team. But for the most part, when Alabama needs a win, they get a win. So Georgia being favored, I was a little surprised, but Georgia's that good. And I'll tell you right now, Nick Chubb getting into the same conversation as Herschel Walker is insane, but well-deserved. Look, Herschel Walker's a legend. He is beyond the normal legend of college athletes. Like I said to Jake, I said it must be blasphemy in Athens to compare any running back to Herschel Walker. He was that good. You talk to, and that goes for anybody in the SEC. Look, if you're a running back in the SEC, if you get a Herschel Walker comparison, then that's as good as gold. You can, that is a tradable commodity for goods and services, man. You are really, really garnering attention if they put you in that category. Nick Chubb and Leonard Fournette are going to go back and forth. And here's the thing, and we're going to do a little Heisman talk tomorrow. The thing that I worry about with both of these guys when it comes to the Heisman, and just to give you a kind of an idea, one of the reasons I like the Heisman so much is because of the politics that are involved. If you're a fan of presidential elections, you would love the Heisman. If you are a fan of political strategy when it comes to presidential elections, we spend money over here, we get votes here, this state, we guarantee we're going to get votes here, so we'll put more of our effort on this one. This is a swing state, this is a loser state. The Heisman works the same way. There are regions, and then those who vote are in certain regions of the country. And the key to winning the Heisman is not to convince everybody in the country that you are their number one choice. No, no, no. The key to the Heisman is convincing voters across the country you at least deserve to be on the ballot. So you get points for getting first, second, or third placements. So somebody writes their top three as a Heisman vote, you get points for every first, every second, every third. One of the reasons Tim Tebow was able to go to New York every single year for the first, the 3 years of his career was because he was able to garner enough votes, even in years where you felt like, Tebow shouldn't win the Heisman, but he had good enough year that he garnered enough votes on everybody's ballot. That's where Nick Chubb and Leonard Fournette are in trouble. One of these guys, if the SEC wants one of these guys to have a Heisman, then one of these guys has got to fail. One of these guys has got to have a bad year because the South is going to split votes between these two. Around the country, guys who cover the Pac-12 or guys who cover the Big Ten, are they going to put Leonard Fournette and Nick Chubb, both of those guys from the Southeastern Conference, on their ballots when they're more accustomed to seeing certain other players in their own conference, and even a few out of conference, but within the geographical location? See, it is political. That's one of the reasons these athletic departments send out so much stuff when it comes to Heisman hopefuls, because they want the guy in Oregon who covers the Ducks or that guy in Washington that covers the Huskies to be paying attention to LSU football. And it's a politics game. It has always been a politics game, and I find it really fascinating. Nick Chubb and Leonard Fournette will be splitting the Southeastern vote. It's which one of these guys impresses the guy in Boston, or the guy in Michigan, the guy in North Dakota, the guy in Wisconsin, the guy in California. That guy, whether it's Nick Chubb or Leonard Fournette, is going to have a leg up in the Heisman race if they continue at this pace. Chubb can really make an impact in a game against Alabama. If he has a big game on the ground against Alabama, he is going to have a lot of love from the Heisman voters. And Fournette is going to be called into service to do that in November when the Tigers take on Alabama. So there's a lot of cool ramifications. Long story short, a lot of cool ramifications for this game coming up on Saturday.
I find it interesting that some of the guys that have Heisman votes are guys that don't even watch games.
There's
so many voters out there that don't even watch these games, and they're still expected to throw their votes in.
Well, it's an old if you were a reporter back in the day, and then you may have like semi-retired, maybe write a little bit, left, but you're not on the beat, you still can keep that vote.
Yeah.
Like I know plenty of guys who have done that.
Yeah, I know a few guys that have votes and they don't even watch college football. They'll watch here and there, maybe watch a big game.
I watch so much college football, and I don't have a vote.
Exactly. There's people out there like you and other guys that watch so many games every weekend that don't have a vote, and they're more qualified to make the decision.
And I wonder if I lobbied to get a vote, if they would immediately go, "You're banned for life. Don't ask ever again. Get out of here. Don't ever ask again. You're on the list."